Content warning ahead, there be spoilers, lots of spoilers for the movie Division 19. So, if you haven't seen it yet and you want to remain unspoiled, save this episode for until after you've seen the movie. Otherwise, dig in. And hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Susie Hailwood, who is a British filmmaker who has dived into the world that I truly love, which is independent science fiction filmmaking. She has a brand new dystopian thriller called Division 19. She wrote it. She directed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though some of it confused me, which is not actually a bad thing, because story is important, and this was compelling from beginning to end, and I have so many questions for her. Welcome, Susie.
Hello. Yes, very nice to meet you.
So what, tell us a little bit of background about Division 19. It's, to me, it was like Truman Show and Running Man on steroids, dreamed up by Satan.
I'll be Satan then, that'll be it. I know, it's really embarrassing. I haven't actually seen Running Man. I know that's really, everyone's been asking me about Running Man, and I haven't. I thought, well, I must have seen it, and I've just kind of, you know, in whatever the word is, ingested it and then spat it out again, but I haven't. So that is one to be, to look at. But yes, the funny thing is, people say dystopian, but I now think this is what is happening now. You know, all our data's mined. People are watched constantly. I mean, the reason I originally wrote it, which was probably 10, 15 years ago, was because at the time when the Blair government was in, they were trying to change the Bill of Rights. And there was this real erosion of civil liberties. And they were trying to bring in, you know, bio passports, which they did. RFID chips for kids. It had just gone crazy. So that a lot of people, if they'd never committed a crime and there was a mistake made, could never get off some kind of criminal database. So, you know, in the long term, obvious sort of turnout of that is that, you know, you're controlled by the state, because if they've got your DNA, they can put you anywhere. Now, obviously, I'm, you know, supposedly a conspiracy theorist, but I'm not. One of my favourite lines is, there's no such thing as conspiracy theories. There are only conspiracies. And you know, that's what I don't think the state is benevolent. And, you know, we've got to be very careful. So this was what it was about. It was, there's two sides to the story. And the first one, which is the Hardin Jones character, is, this is what will happen to us all if we're not careful. The guy in jail who gets watched by everybody and voted on, who doesn't know that's happening to him. And then the other side of the story is the brother's side, which is, this is what we can do about it. You know, I mean, there's a similar thing going on in the UK at the moment with the whole Brexit thing. Whichever way you voted, that's not even the fascinating thing now. It's, the fascinating thing is how the democratic process is collapsed, because actually nobody cares about what anybody wants. You know, politicians don't care, they're just there for themselves, and everyone knows this, but we're the ones with the power. You know, we pay the tax. We could stop doing that and then demand what we want. And this is the second half of the film, which is, you know, they can hack into radio systems and take money out of banks remotely, and basically they don't want to run the world, but they're saying, if you don't do it as we want, because we're the voters, then we'll take over.
Well, first of all, I have to say that just because we call it dystopian doesn't mean we're not actively living it.
Yes.
The fascinating part to me was the, everybody's watching television, everybody's watching this character, and my first thought was, this is the absolute worst parts of shows, the reality TV shows that have infiltrated our lives. There was a book that came out a few years ago talking about how reality TV is actually warping our reality, warping our narrative, and everybody wants to be famous for 15 minutes and hope that that 15 minutes gets them something longer. And to me, one of the worst examples of this and how it hooks back into Division 19 is there's a show called Love After Lockup, where people have fallen in love with felons and are dating them, marrying them, getting in trouble because of them after they're out. I'm like, how did this happen? What world did I wake up in? And can I go back to sleep now? And when you see certain scenes play out in Division 19, at some point my jaw is on the ground going, this, oh yeah, I can see this happening. Because there was a whole thing a couple of years ago about a guy who had a hot mug shot and people are swooning over this guy, and he got a modeling job when he got out. I'm like, what?
I know, that's
What?
crazy, but that's show Gogglebox. People actually want, and it's been really successful. I don't know whether you have it over there, but it's people watching TV and commenting on it, and you're watching them watching TV.
Yeah,
This bonkers, this idea, and I think it's to do with value. People feel like they don't have that, or validation. It's like they don't have any validation unless they've been on telly. And everything becomes second and third and fourth hand. Everything you read now, in the old days, say you'd read a book and that's already second hand, but it might have been somebody living rough for 6 months and they've written a book, but then someone just talks about the book. And the more scripts you read now, I find this, and no one can help it really. You just watch, they watch so much TV and films and everything. It's like you say, Running Man. Okay, I hadn't seen Running Man, and there's always a lot of zeitgeist of certain things changing. But how anyone could want to watch somebody else on TV? It's like with Big Brother. It's not interesting if they know they're being watched. If someone doesn't know they're being watched, that's kind of fascinating.
And that was the whole, the Truman Show connection for me, because Hardin doesn't know he's being watched until he's been broken out, but then he runs away and he's and then we find out that all of these things are connected that we have, and just the unexpected lines that some of the narratives took really, really fascinated me. And the one I really, really wanted to ask about, because I'm not sure if I missed something or if there was a seed planted at the beginning that I missed. Linus Roach's character, I guess the equivalent of the prime minister, I guess. He goes off the reservation, basically. He goes native. He begins to bond with the cause that Hardin and his brother Nash are representing. And that came as a really big surprise to me, a really pleasant surprise, because you never see that. You never see the figurehead go, nah, I'm out of here. I'm joining team, the other team.
Doesn't entirely leave the system, but yes, absolutely. His, in fact, his the name Lyndon. He's called Charles Lyndon. That's because he's Charles Lyndon is Tony Blair's middle two names.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and everyone's name is a code. Like obviously Nielsen is the research into of people that watch TVs. Nash and Hardin are both mathematicians because it was originally a bit more kind of game theory based. But no, the Lyndon character, what I like about him is, he realizes how way behind they all are. And there's a great line by, I think it's Tony Benn, who always said the trouble is by the time you get your hands on the levers of power, you realize they're not connected to anything. And there's a truth in that. So I think that Linus's character thinks, Christ, we're so behind the times here. And he remembers why he got into politics. He was one of the decent people that thought he could change everything. And he suddenly realizes that nothing is ever going to change, which it doesn't. There's too much red tape. And the elite always wins the day. Banker always wins. And so he doesn't exactly join them, but he agrees to make differences. And he doesn't make them just because they're threatening him, because he realizes they're actually quite decent people. They're just saying this is what you should be doing. So he thinks, yeah, why not? Why can't we ban too many CCTV shows. Why can't we do this one? And he just tries to listen to what they're saying because what they're saying is reasonable.
Yeah, it's like people always say you have to join the system in order to change it, but by the time you climb the ladder to be in a position to change it, the system has either crushed you or changed you. So there's no will, there's no way to actually truly, truly change the system by working your way up through it. It's a
Yeah, it also that absolute power, corrupts absolutely. It's
yes,
true.
that
And
too.
you look at our parliament now, all those politicians, they might have started out with great intentions, but now all they're talking about is reversing what was effectively a democratic vote. And you're like, you can hear yourselves. The whole point of parliament years ago was, you had representatives from your local communities. Like there was a farmer in parliament or the fisherman in parliament, and this is the whole point. They represented, and now it's just career politicians. Well, they've got no idea what real life's like. They look after a constituency in Newcastle, and they live in London. I mean, they haven't got a clue. So and I think really democracy in this country has only been for 150 years. Maybe it just doesn't work.
Well, if people are compensated enough to the point where they don't have to game the system to steal the money they want, maybe that changes things. Personally, I think the Citizens United ruling here in the US completely destroyed everything that we had built up the past 200 years, and the games continue. And I'm not going to talk about them right now because that will make me get angry and want to punch a wall. But talk, I mean, this movie has just so many layers. The when they introduced the concept of the Panopticon TV and the Panopticon 2 and the Panopticon 3, I was completely blown away, going, somebody's going to use this as a roadmap.
Yeah, unfortunately,
But
brilliant.
you said you started the story 12, 15 years ago. How, walk us through a little bit of that process of where it started, where it changed, and where you wanted to take it, and how you got there, got here, actually.
Well, what originally actually it was a couple of what we call tramps, which you probably it's a different word here. You call them bums, but it was a couple of guys that were sort of living on the street, and they won a competition, and it was the two brothers, but it was just two friends at the time, and they win a competition and stay in this fantastic big house, and it's about how the house is watched and blah 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 blah, and it was much smaller. And then a film came out that was quite similar to all those themes, which was Gamer. So then I thought,
Yes,
oh,
I remember that.
change it, and because I worked with Jerry Butler years ago, and I remember bumping into him and seeing this. I said, Christ, this is just like a film of mine. Can you send me a script? And it was just too similar. So I changed it completely, and then, but I couldn't change it totally. But the idea was, like I say, with the Tony Blair thing, it was just so shocking how many things were changed. And they had this thing called Very Cool, which was for the kids at school to have RFID chips. And it just felt like, if we don't stop this, the next thing is Newtown. We're all, which we are already. I mean, I read that the CIA put money into Facebook when it started out. They have all these splinter companies that will then invest in companies, and it's very hard to trace it back. But there's a very good book called Who Pays the Piper. And that's about really how you can connect all the dots. And yet, so all these people now that go onto Facebook, I'm like, God, you're giving away everything. If somebody wants to put you in a crime scene 10 years from now, they'll have all the evidence they need. And this is what the state's been doing for years, hasn't it? Like, you look back at the IRA, there's often murders that have been attributed to the IRA that were nothing to do with the IRA. It was just politically useful at the time for the state to be able to use the IRA, and they managed to get rid of loads of people. Nothing to
Yeah.
do with the IRA. So once you can then do that online, you've got an even further reach. And it's like in this country, and certainly Ireland, I don't know about in America, but where they're trying to get rid of pubs, public houses and bars. I mean, that's where revolution started, and now everyone sits in coffee shops, but you don't quite start a revolution when you're drinking a coffee, but you probably do after 12 pints of Guinness. So they're sort of cutting down on all those, and all the sort of the ways that people joined up together, which they now obviously do online. You can start a revolution online. I mean, they did in Egypt. But it's they're now trying to control all those elements as well, aren't they? And stopping people watching certain things, and So, I just think in the end, now we've got this perfect opportunity where there is the internet that at the moment isn't really policed, not in terms of starting a revolution. And there's this option to now say, look, actually, we're going to take it back and you can make a difference. Whether anyone will, because they're just too exhausted, I've got no idea. But, that's the thing I feel about the Division 19. It's like, how far are you going to go? Because in the end, even if we have robots, they're going to have mental health issues because we program them, I think one of the problems with it is a lot of people saying, God, but yeah, but there's so many things you're bringing in. But God, that's what it's going to be like. That's what it's like now. And I think that it was an experiment, this film. Like, obviously, normally you just, it's always, character is structure, isn't it? Whereas to me, I started it off as a game of chess, and you're moving people around and saying, this is what this if you what happened if you go this way, what happens if you go this way? So it ended up being a different type of thing than, say, I don't know, American Sniper. You're following one guy, really, aren't you, for the whole time?
Yeah, the I think people underestimate how much information overload affects your psyche, especially if you're getting your information, you're trying to get your information from multiple sources, and it's become a 24/7 thing. So you think you have this anxiety, this feeling that you have to keep reading all the different news sources to keep up, and you're so busy trying to keep up, you don't have enough time to process some of the information, determine, beyond the knee-jerk reaction in the minute, and then you're on to the next news item that's caught your eye. Or, you take a break and you go look at puppy and kitten videos on YouTube just to get your sanity back. And then you go back and there's so much coming in, you're almost paralyzed into not being able to do something because you're stuck in this loop of, I have to keep ingesting more information because I have to know what's going on. And that's a little bit how this movie felt. There was so much coming in, and the Nielsen and Lyndon were processing all of this data. They were collecting all this data from their like 50 million, 60 million viewers of Hardin, trying to gauge how many eyes they would have on Newtown, which was going to be the town that was completely camera filled to watch their lives. And the part that got me was the viewers would be able to interact, to vote on what Hardin would do next. He goes into the bar. Is he going to take the money? Is he going to steal the money? Is he going to steal the car? Is he going to buy the car? I'm like, oh my God, you're kidding me. And that whole thing of, we need to keep the eyes on the screen because that's how we know where they are, I think is the point a lot of people might miss. And I was just floored by it.
I was trying to think of if you're in the end, that's the thing that you always wish you had more money for, because that Newtown originally was massive, and there's no way you could do it with the budget. And people that wanted to commit suicide, for example, would go into Newtown and they'd have a there was suicide rooms, and they'd go, look, do you want to go out in style? And there are all these different ways you could die, but you become a hero, because it's all the kind of, if you look at what's happened with Christchurch, it's just brilliant that the Prime Minister of New Zealand has kind of said, never mention his name. All these people that go out and shoot up loads of schools and everything, they've taken all these iconic pictures of themselves. And this is all part of that fame thing. If you're a complete failure, you can go up and shoot up a school and become famous for a few, for weeks. Now, I'm not saying that's why they do it. Obviously, there's a lot of nutters out there. But, it's still part of the iconic image element, isn't it? If you were never mentioned and no one ever heard of the crimes you committed, you do have to wonder how many people would have still commit those crimes. But they're just so angry. So I, but all these kind of things, and then you think, oh, how sick is that? But that's how dark it is.
Yeah, well, there's an element to that. I remember reading some stuff a few years ago that some of the people do this to get attention because the world is so big and so connected. They see everybody else having the life that they have no shot at, and they decide to, do the Billy the Kid move and go out with a bang and be rem hopefully in their mind be remembered forever. And I'm like, really? You
Wow,
couldn't
they're
have
all
just,
the
I mean,
same type.
seriously, go to that, what the tallest skyscraper in the world is in Dubai. Go up to the roof, jump. You will make an impression, trust me. Gravity will see to that.
Hopefully not on a passerby below, but yeah. But yeah, so it's true. I mean, the guy that, you know, with Batman, was it Batman? He shot up the cinema and it recently. And, you know, people can see all those faces and they show them on TV. It's just don't mention these people, you know, because they're all the same. They've, you know, disastrous relationship, bad relationship with their mother, still live at home, wear combats, member of a gun club. You know, they're not difficult to find. I mean, the guy that drove up, you know, towards Parliament and killed loads of people, same thing. His wife had kicked him out, didn't get on with his kids, you know. So, yes, there's a lot of very troubled people. So that, I'm not quite sure, yes, I think a little bit went off piece there. But, yes, there's. I just sort of feel like unless, and this is what the rant really is at the beginning, it is that kind of this is the time, this is the place, you are the person. You know, unless we, the kind of person on the street, does anything about it, it will never change because it hasn't changed in thousands of years, you know.
Yeah, so the film is both, I guess, bleak and left unopened or left unresolved. You don't know how it ends, but you know that certain people who you've been following are going to start traveling a different road, and you wonder if they're going to make it. And you wonder where that changes the world, or if it even does. You don't even have a hope of that on a larger scale. But you see that some people who believed that changing things was the right thing to do, you see them trying. And I guess that kind of leans it away from the dystopian element. There's still that doubt that's there, and I think I like that it was left unanswered. It was left for
won't.
Right. It was left for the viewer to make a judgment call, just a determination for themselves. And I would be curious to see what other people think of this movie. Now, it's being released April 5th in theaters and on demand, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
And it actually won some awards. You won Best Director at the Boston Science Fiction Film Festival last year. And I'm like, wait, how did I not hear about that last year?
Yeah, it's very small. No, that was great. And they were lovely. And they did all, you know, they had all these, it was brilliant. And Fantasporto, actually, I went there with an early cut. So it was just great that it even got, you know, picked. But then, of course, you realize that if you go with an early cut, it's forever got 2017 on it, which is a bit unfortunate, but never mind. Yes, I mean, I think in terms of where the characters go, right, did you think that Nash lived at the end?
I thought that was a fake out, but I wasn't sure where he was. I had thought that the brothers would end up, you know, walking off into the sunset together, but it looks like they really went their separate ways. But yeah, I got the impression that Nash's staged ending was exactly that.
Because it's funny because I thought I'd made it really clear because you can see Nash twice after that. He's on the top of the bus at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because he's lying down, it doesn't necessarily look like him. And then he's standing up on top of a building looking down at Hardin when Hardin walks off.
Yes. Yeah, that was
shots in because people weren't quite sure that Nash was still alive. But I think if this was a TV series, say, and this was episode one, then in the end, what would happen was either Barker or Nash, you know, eventually they'd have to collapse the state because the state's never going to change. But then they would come in and they were leaders. Then they just become the people that they were fighting against, you know, 20 years before, because in the end, the power does corrupt. So, you know, someone like Barker would just be this crazed leader, even though he started out with all the right qualifications, because I think psychologically, you know, if you want to lead a country, you're already fucked as a person, you know, in some levels. I mean, there's a book called Wounded Leaders, and it's about the psychological makeup you need to become a leader. And these people are, you know, they're narcissists and sociopaths. And, you know, who really wants that in their lives every single day, you know?
There was something else I read years ago that said your typical financial CEO is a financial industry CEO is a narcissist or a sociopath or a little bit of both. I'm like, that's just lovely. But yeah, I got the impression that Nash was still alive. Where did the idea for having this team of rebels be parkour guys come from? Because that was just delightful to watch.
Well, the weird thing is, I mean, in a sense, I still know why I used the word parkour in the parkour police. I wish I hadn't done that because really, because in order to stay off the grid, these guys just travel without ever using transport. So the obvious thing you're going to do is go via the sewers or via the rooftops. So in a sense, they were never really supposed to be parkour guys, but if you're living on the rooftops, eventually you're going to learn to jump from building to building. So it's a bit unfortunate that people kind of don't like the fact that they're parkour guys, but it's like, well, where else how are you going to get around? You jump on buses and you jump on trains, and that's how you get around, if you don't want to be on the system. So yes, but we did have some very good parkour guys. In fact, the world champion trained the parkour guys in Detroit and LA, Chase Armitage. He was the world champion a few years back, but he was fantastic. So of course he turned up and they're like, oh my God, is that really Chase Armitage? Yeah. He'd work with a friend of a friend. So yeah, it was great fun watching all that, but it was never really supposed, again, if you have more money, the idea was that you had hundreds of these guys crawling out of windows and all over the city so that the sky goes dark and they're like locusts. But unless you've got 40 million, you can only employ, 30 parkour guys.
Well, I hope that the distributors come to you with a suggestion of having those police jackets that say "Parkour Police" on the back of them for sale as movie swag, because I would get one of those jackets just for the hell of it, because that seeing "Parkour Police" on the back of
Yeah.
all these strike team jackets. I started laughing. I'm like, I want that shirt. I want that jacket. I really do.
think it's probably stuck in there's probably 10 of them stuck in the Masonic Temple in Detroit. You'll probably see some a bum wearing it in Detroit somewhere, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know what happens to all those things. I should have thought about that.
Somebody collected the props. Somebody somewhere collected the props. They have it in a bin, stuck in their garage someplace, and you just have to find it,
Yeah.
and before they start holding it hostage or selling it on eBay.
Oh, I could sell it, bless them. They're in the film industry, they'll need the money.
Well, the movie is Division 19. It's in theaters and on demand on April 5th. You and a lot of the cast and production team are going to be touring the US next week, actually, right?
Yeah, from April the 5th. Actually, it's probably, I haven't asked the cast to come along, but I might, yes. We'll be around.
Okay. Well, for folks listening, the movie will be in theaters in LA, Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, Cleveland, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and Detroit. Now, you said you filmed parts of this in Detroit and LA?
Yeah, we started off in Detroit. It was fantastic, actually. I really wanted to film in Detroit, and I didn't know anyone there, so I got in touch with this the line producer that was doing. Oh God, it was just in First Man, a very famous actor, and his name escapes me. Anyway, he was filming in Detroit at the time, so I got in touch with his line producer and just said, "Look, can you help out? I don't know anybody there." And she said, "Yeah, come over." And so we went over there, and he was still filming. God help me with his name. He was in.
Is that Ryan Gosling?
Ryan Gosling, Christ, I'm getting old. Ryan Gosling, I've been writing a script all day and I'm still stuck in a Barbados heist situation. Yes, Ryan Gosling. So when I got there, he was kind of like, he's really, obviously, he's a massive film buff. And the first day we filmed, we were recce and we got arrested in the Packard building. And when I say arrested, they didn't carry us off. They just said, look, show us your ID and then we'll let you go or you pay a fine. I didn't have any ID, because I'm from the UK and we just don't carry ID. No one cares. And the same had happened to him. Stopped Ryan Gosling and said, "Can you give us some ID?" Because he didn't have any ID. Oh, well, you should have had to give him a few DVDs. So I kind of a lot of the crew from his film, which obviously was a much bigger budget and all the rest of it, came on to my film. So that was probably a bit of a letdown for them. 1 week they were being directed by Ryan Gosling, and the next week it was me. But he was still going out filming when no one realised he was still filming. So it's a typical director, just go off and get a few more shots. Like, where's he gone? Oh, he's gone back to the Packard plant. So yeah, so we filmed in Detroit, loved it. Filmed there for 3 or 4 weeks. I think I was there for about 2 months. Just blew me away. I thought it was an amazing place. And the second half of the filming we were going to do in London, but then someone pointed out it's never going to fit because it'll be raining every 5 minutes. So we just decided to do it in LA, and that's when Linus came on board and Alison, and yeah, it was great because it was everything's easy in LA shooting, you know.
Cool. Well, I am encouraging people to check this out, especially if they like a dystopian feel that makes you think about what's going on and actually pay attention. The editing on this is just delightful. Some of the cinematography is stunning in a few places, and the music, your music guy really knocked it out of the park, I thought.
Oh yeah, they're good music. I mean, we didn't. The music's always really difficult, isn't it? I had one person do stuff, and then I didn't quite like it, and then I got another two guys, and they were absolutely amazing. One of them was his first score.
Wow.
He was only about 21. And he's a real genius. So yeah, it was David O'Dowda and Seb Fail that did the music, and then there's some other bits of music in it as well. But yeah, it's always difficult, I think, especially when you cut and recut. And one of the things that with sci-fi that I find really difficult is, you are doing the layers, so one cut doesn't look. It's completely different then when you start, adding on special effects, and then the screens and the timings of scenes needed to be different and things like this. So I not everybody likes that jumpiness or whatever, but in a sense, that's what the world is like. I always wanted that first half of the film when it was in the city to be this real smorgasbord of noises and, crazy sounds and way too much happening. So it was like you said, this is what real life's like. There's just too much information coming at people. And I do think people are now wanting to go back to things when they were a little bit calmer and you weren't getting masses of information. And I don't mean you necessarily live out in a field and plant vegetables. But there was a line that lo we lost in the end. It was in the very last scene when he says, that's the thing about living out, in the city. You don't ever get in what you put out. Whereas you live out in the country, you plant a potato, you get potatoes back. But that kind of went. And I do think people are, wanting to go back a little bit to making things. And when it was just a simpler time, it's very complex. Maybe not very young people, but anybody over even 38. It's like Christ, this is a real rat race now. It's just there's just too much going on, and there's too many people. So the second half was supposed to be this very nice, peaceful, countryside, and anything's possible. But of course, once you've gone that far, and I always like the idea that here was everybody in the world wants to be famous, and here's the one guy who would give anything for his anonymity, but you can't have it. It's too
Yeah.
late. Once the thing's known, it can't be unknown, kind of thing.
Awesome. Now, during your tour, when you're stateside, are you going to be attending any screenings with question and answer sessions that people
Well,
can
they did
check
ask.
out?
Well, I said, look, of course I will, but everyone, someone's going to ask me what the film's about. I'm not going to have a clue. But yes, the plan is, I'm not quite sure exactly what's happening. I'll get to America next Monday, and then from then on in, we'll sort of make all the plans of Q and A's and where to travel and stuff like that. So that would be the plan. I'll see what they think in, yeah, Uncorked.
Cool. So I will definitely use my Twitters to tell people to go check out the movie, go find you wherever you're appearing, because like I said, this one is it's very heady,
Yeah.
but there's a lot to process, but it's so nicely done. I like I said, whenever indie sci-fi is done well, I will wave a flag for it in a
Oh, that's
heartbeat.
amazing. Well, especially because you had to watch the version you watched. I'm in two minds to send you the other thing and just see if it's different. But I'll have a listen, and thank you for sending that so that I can just check it out.
Okay. Susie, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks for watching it, and thanks for your kind words.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
So yes, Division 19 will be available April 5th on demand and in select theaters. The list of theaters I mentioned in the interview, and it's also in the show notes on sliceofscifi.com. Check it out when you get a chance. It's a very, very heady ride. It's not a clear storyline through in some places. It's some places you're not sure which type of storyline you're following. Is it the reality? Is it the televised reality from Panopticon? There's some confusion in a couple places, but to me, it does not detract from the story or the message that the story appeared to be telling about how insidious the infiltration of our personal lives can get, both with and without our knowledge. And that's the kind of story indie sci-fi movies should be telling. And we need more good indie sci-fi. Yes, I've been on a horror kick the past couple of years for good reason. I'm not going into details, but we need indie sci-fi to tell some of these scary stories, because when you're immersed in the scary, unprecedented situations, it's kind of hard to see your way out. And what is science fiction except for telling stories that explore solutions to untenable situations? Why on earth do we have so many dystopian and post-apocalyptic stories to begin with? Because people imagine the worst, but also imagine how we can be our best and get out of them. So there's that. Division 19 from Uncorked is out there, or will be out there soon. Hopefully you guys will take a look at it, and we can discuss later after you've seen it. I may watch it myself again if she gets me another screener, because we had talked before the interview started. The screener I saw had an imbalance in the audio. I couldn't hear it when I was listening normally, but when I put the headphones in, big difference. So hopefully that was fixed before. Because the screener I got was an early cut. So we'll see. But we still have contests running on the website that you can still enter. Again, the way to tiptoe through the maze and get to the contest: go to the contact form on sliceofscifi.com, fill it out, use accurate information, because if you do not include a valid email address, I cannot contact you to get your prize to you. So you have to give me your real email address. The first step is to select have a different question as a subject. Then, in order to get to the different prizes, if you're interested in the horror prizes, in the message box, put in, we're gonna need a bigger boat. If you're interested in the science fiction prizes, you need to enter Elf Shot the Food. And when those key phrases are entered, a secret section should magically appear, and you'll be able to select which prizes you're interested in. And yeah, if you want to enter more than once, say pick a horror prize once and then enter later and pick a sci-fi prize, I can't stop you from doing that. I can say that one single person will not win two prizes from both sections, but I can't stop you from entering more than once. So have fun. Later on, and I hope it's soon, because I think April 5th is when those come out. Bumblebee is coming out on Blu-ray and 4K, and we'll have a review for that coming up soonish. Plus, I will have a 4K version of that for giveaway at a future date. So keep your ears tuned to this show or your eyes tuned to the Twitter feed or the website to keep an eye out for that. Other than that, we have the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival coming up in the Phoenix metro area, April 4th through the 14th. As they have been doing for the past couple years, the Phoenix Film Festival is running through all of the daytime programming, and the Horror Sci-Fi Film Festival is running all of the nighttime programming. So we'll have links to the film festival website. Check it out. It is really a fun festival. They have debuted some interesting features over the years, and this year's lineup looks just as tempting. And we're going to have a conversation with Monty Yazzie coming up to talk about this year's festival. If you have any questions or comments, please call. The number is 602-635-6976, or send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on TuneIn, and Player FM. And if you would, please leave us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher. Let folks know that you are enjoying the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. You can check out our news and reviews sections. You can actually weigh in with your own review of some of the stuff we've covered. If you do not agree with the ratings we have given, weigh in with your own. That's what we're here for, to spark geek discussions of all sorts. So have fun with that. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting the show, helping us keep things online here. If you would like to add your support, please head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you just want to make a one-time donation every now and then instead of a monthly pledge, you can use the PayPal link at paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. I'd also like to thank my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the theme music for the show here. If you want to find out more from them, check out their website, sci-fried.com. And that Babylon 5 parody that they did, For Whom Babylon Tolls, is available on their album Ramming Speed, which you can find on their Bandcamp page. So look for that and enjoy. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.